Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Okay, this is a podcast on quantum mechanical tunnelling. I'm going to try and speak up a bit because I'm aware that there's going to be loud traffic noise coming down. Not as much all the time because I'm just walking away from some lights, you know, how cars slow down. Now, the previous podcast I did was about the periodic table and the quantum mechanics underlying lying at the periodic table. This is what you call a signature, quantum mechanical fable. And this is called quantum mechanical tunneling. And it's just so intensely important in every aspect. And so it explains about how things can come together and fall apart when, with via quantum mechanics, and it wouldn't be possible in the classical world. So the classic thing is if you imagine a alpha particle being a skateboarder, in a raised skateboard park, a ramp, and he's the alpha particle. So the alpha particle is a helium nucleus. There's just a little tiny bullet of positive charge, two positive charges, approach two protons, two neutrons, and it will form a helium nucleus. This will orbit, in the classical view, orbit the outer side, and in classical theory, it will never go. It's sort of like a can of water droplet get to the other side of Hoover Dam, and it's, you know, it's just technically impossible to do. Ah, that's interesting.
Hello.
Hello. First hello I've ever had from that particular person. And it's, you know, various different people are difficult to have hellos from. Okay, so the issue here is this is incredibly important. It's incredibly important for chemical reactions for which you have a barrier and you've got to get through the barrier. So for dissociation. So what will happen is that you can have this barrier and it will take time for it to fall apart because it's got to quantum mechanically travel through a barrier. So often you will hit a molecule with light and a while later it will decay. Similarly with something which is radioactive, it will take a while to give out its radiation. So if you can imagine a these vases set up in this beautiful room and people come in and they knock one over and everything falls over. Classically, everything will fall over instantly. But in quantum mechanics, things take a while to fall over because when they fall over, they've got the energy and then they can work out how to fall. They take a little while to work it out. And so the story is, the classical physics story is imagine I have a wall and I'm throwing a tennis ball at it. If I throw the tennis ball a billion times, one in a billion times, this is a thousand million times, that tennis ball will behave as if the wall's not there and actually hit the person on the opposite side. And that doesn't happen, that just happens at the nucleus, the atomic scale. And this is saying, what is happening is as if this happens. Then the next step is, it does happen. Whereas the actual story is a little bit more complicated than that. What I find intensely interesting is that this picture, which is something you can imagine, is described by lecturers, and which is incorrect, and students re-describe it, and this goes, and they become lecturers, and it keeps them going until the Australian of the Year was a quantum physicist last year. And what did she have to say about quantum physics, blah, blah, blah. Oh, this is a bit woolly. And then she describes, and quantum tunnelling, this phenomenon of something actually going through a barrier. So how could anyone, big question is, Overseas, you don't care. In Australia, there's, what are you saying? Something that you know more than a lecturer? How can that be? And this is what I suppose I've got to explain. How can it be? How it can be is that you can actually do the mathematics and get a more sophisticated understanding of what is going on. And what it is to observe something and basically overturn one by one incorrect understanding. So it's amazing that one small incorrect understanding can actually turn things over and mean that if you can't understand one thing, it leads all tracks away across because so you can't understand another. So answering that question with it non-defensively, just matter of fact, even though it's meant in a offensive way, how can you possibly understand more quantum physics than the Australian of the Year, a quantum physicist? How can that be? I'm not saying that. I can say evidently from the explanation was given that the understanding isn't there. And how it can be is you have a practical problem, you have to actually calculate a spectra. Hi mate. You have to calculate a spectra. A spectrum. You have to calculate something. So you start off with what you normally do with it's from the things that you know, the mass, the field distribution, the equations. And then you say, I've got to get to there to the answer, which is a standard physics problem. I don't have to waffle. I have to actually go through and calculate and then compare what I calculate with the real world. And this doesn't involve lectures. It doesn't involve being thought of any more. It just involves being correct. And it's something that you produce and you publish in a paper, and other people can do the same thing. So you start off with the charge of the electron, the mass of the electron, the mass of the nucleus, the charge of the nucleus, the potential around the nucleus, which you model, and you model by saying that since we don't quite know, this is the shape of the potential, the force that's felt around. We think it's likely that, but the result we get will produce a certain spectrum, and so we can actually close the two. But hey, it is a bloody noisy place, isn't it? I apologise for it. So we're starting off with experimental results and a parameter which we can change, and we don't say blindly quantum mechanical tunneling happens, but you can get a situation where quantum mechanical tunneling will happen. And quantum mechanical tunneling is it has to be bound at an energy that it can get to, once it gets through the tunnel into the tunnel, it will fly away. So if you imagine it's a scoop and the hole is built up and the thing's in a hole, but it's filled up above, it's like a water tank put above the water. If it's a well, it will stay there. If it's above, it can leak out. So this is quantum mechanical tunneling is vacuously leaking. And we experience that in terms of radiation, but all biology, all life is based on quantum mechanical tunneling. It's the timing thing which really determines what goes on. And it's exquisitely balanced by this. So how does it go? So the equation, the Schrodinger wave equation, you can break it up into so many different ways, and it's beautiful, and you only need a little bit of polyfiller to fit in between to get back together if it's not that good. So there's two big ways that you can break up the Schrodinger wave equation. Bloody hell. Bracket Schrodinger wave equation. You can do time and space, nucleus and electrons. Time and space is the time independent Schrodinger wave equation. That is the time equation with time removed from it. Bloody hell. And nuclear versus electronic wave function those two separate functions separate is called the Born-Oppenheimer approximation. And you can glue them back together really easily by saying, oh, how good is this approximation? That goodness of the approximation is just a simple figure of merit. It can be 99% good or 90% good. And that means in your calculations, when you're doing it, you can solve it by there again. I have to, because I've had a heart operation, I have to really just walk every day, or sometimes like an hour on the exercise bike.
Like my dad, have they given you how many steps you're supposed to take in one day?
No, I've just got to hit, I've got to lose weight, I've got to get up there. It's so how's your dad? Oh,
he's got to do, it equals out to around about 5 kilometres a day.
Ah, okay. Well, that's what I do. I'll walk up, have my blood test. I've got to have my little blood test. All that blood. This is because I've got this magic thing. They put a little aircraft part in me.
Oh.
It's fantastic. It's a mechanical part, so it never wears out. I don't have to worry about it at all. But because I have to have blood thinners in there to check that I'm okay and all that blah. But yeah, so I have to really do it. So
I saw your face. I still like you catch them because I just want to talk to
them. This is the up here. Has he sold up, has he? Okay, well, I'm going to keep on going. But yeah, serious things. It's support like this. When I was first out, I could only walk like this. And it would take me hours. And the police would drive past.
I just got the lecture.
Okay, so
you've got any car 78 Great Western Highway, Glenbrook.
Right.
Put it back in the system. A note on the mail.
All right. Okay, see you guys. Alright, catch you later, mate. Alright. Okay, that's our local postie. And I waved him early on and he knows and you know all the various stories. And as said, yeah, the police police know about these Cardi people recovering, and I was one of them, and they would keep an eye on me as I go down. So when I was first recovering, I had to go on Google Earth, and I had a minimum gradient I could go on, and so I had to plot this minimum gradient. So to come down a mountain all the way to Emu Plains, kilometres down, take me, not 5 hours, but something like 3 hours to walk 11 kilometres. And this is going, and it'd be middle of the night. And I have this blanket because it'd be freezing cold because this ravine, all the cold air would come in and just blow through. It's just blisteringly hard. So it's really good, that type of stuff. Okay, so you're getting a little bit of extra time this time. You're getting the sound of an Australian freeway. And just Aussies just pushing along. So he was just, and a lot of the place works because I'm doing this, mate. And you got people put out bins and correct things and get things operational. Okay. I have this equation, Schrodinger wave equation, and these potential curves, which are created from the Born-Oppenheimer approximation. So these are the steps forward. Now, these people who have never done this and become lecturers, well, they won't listen to you. They will change the topic and start to attack you. Unfortunately, not that this has happened, I don't want to let it happen. So you have these potential curves, and you have to run the Schrodinger wave equation. Now, there's sort of two ways you can run a Schrodinger wave equation, and one is so the Schrodinger wave equation says that if I put a function in to this machinery called the Hamiltonian, the energy of it, if I put the function in at a space and I put it all the way in, my answer will be the same function itself with a scale bifactor, and that scale factor is the energy in joules. So that's what the Schrodinger wave equation comes. So you can get a whole equation each, so you could just keep on picking lines, quadratics, cubics, Gaussians, just keep on putting it in until you found one which worked. So you'd put it into the machinery and you would see, there's my result. By putting that function in to the Hamiltonian, do I get the same picture on the other side? It can be enlarged, it can be smaller, but it has to be the same shape. And this is, this is the way of solving differential equations. This is rate of gradient. So that's one way of solving it. But there is another way, and this is where the Schrodinger wave equation has this, the actual equation itself locally has a local solution. So this is, rather than globally, it's got a local solution. And it says that the rate of curvature, I call it squiggliness, this is the second order derivative, is equal to the energy deficit at that point. So if I've got if there's a large, if it's going to go quickly, it will change gradient quickly. And if it's changing gradient quickly, it says that, so imagine you're building a bridge, and it says, now you're building a roller coaster, and now it says, well, you can only build it with extremely curved, curved bits, and you can change the orientation of the curve to be slightly different. So it's the energy deficit times the magnitude of the wave function. So what happens is, as the wave function's up, and it says the energy deficit's there. This is the energy of the particle minus the potential energy. It gives a curvature to it. And so what happens is, it's sort of like pottery wheel. You get this, your hand potters out the shape of the wave function. And you do it. And what actually happens is that you've got two things. You've got this magic curve that in the allowed space, okay. In the allowed space, I'm trying to do this information as best I can. In the allowed space, that is where classically it's allowed, it's got a curvature. But when it's not allowed, it doesn't stop instantly. Like, so if I ram your head against a wall, classically your head hits the wall and that's the end. But in quantum mechanics, it's sort of soft. Your head goes into the wall a bit. And what this means is, it's the exponential is now turned real. It no longer has a complex term, an oscillation term in it, and it decays away. and it decays away at a rate equal to the energy deficit, so the depth into the wall by the size of the wave function. Now, the decay rate can either be because it's time to sign the wave function. And what this means is that you have to get that wave function to go to zero exactly, because the energy deficit gets worse and worse as you go further in. And what that means is that there's only a very fine-tuned window where it will actually do a landing. The wave function actually has to land into the wall. And if it comes in too high, it will crash down and go to minus infinity. If it comes in too low, if it comes in too high, it will sweep up and fly up to infinity. And this is okay. It just says, for that wave function, that particular wave function you've selected has, if it exists, it exists totally in the barrier and not in free space. And so you calibrate it, and that the value of that wave function drops to zero. Except if it's on the perfect rise up and rise down, the two things are absolutely equal. It will form a stable wave function. It's the most beautiful thing to watch and do. Now, this is something you have to do with a computer, an Excel spreadsheet. It's a way towards quantum mechanics. You cannot lecture your way to it. You have to actually do. With computer models and go. You have to get into your molecule and familiarize yourself with the wave function. Go in. And so, in beneath ground, there's only one value for each energy level. And when I say one value, that value is to an incredible number of precision, as many digits as you want, because you change it by a squidgin million billion, eventually, as you go through, that will not go to zero perfectly and start to lift off and destroy it. So your energy level is infinitely sharp. Now, it's a little bit different when you've got an energy barrier on the other side, because it doesn't have to land to zero. It can be near zero and not meet it, because it's tunneling through there. So your exponential decay of that wave function is there. Now, does it mean that the particle appears at the other side? Well, we've got to look at what a particle appears at the other side. Now, what happens is that if you have an energy level above in a barrier, you have a barrier and the energy level is above beneath the peak of the barrier, it will go through it, and there'll be a range, a bandwidth, right? A bandwidth of frequency. So if it's a long way from the ideal frequency, it'll be little, but on the frequency it'll be a lot. Less, and there'll actually be a Q function, a resonance from it. So the bigger and thicker your barrier, the thinner your resonance is, the longer the lifetime of your molecule is, and the sharper your resonance is. So therefore, a alpha particle on a particle has a lifetime of a million years, is a thousand times finer in energy definition than a particle which has got a thousand years, and a million times sharper resolution than a particle that's got a year. And again, your frequency, as your light comes out, as it comes out. Now, it's a bandwidth. And what that means is that you have a range of frequencies that you can play with. And The bigger the bandwidth, the shorter, this is just broadband communication, it goes to optical fiber. The bigger the bandwidth, the shorter the time pulse you can get out. So the bigger the bandwidth, so what you need, now what actually happens is the free space particle from that, your equation, will be an oscillation. It'll be in free space, so, and it'll go down, and this like a complex exponential going through, it will oscillate for free forever. And it's, would mean that your detector would detect a continuous range of detector forever. So you would detect an individual particle, but you detect it as individual particles. And what it means is that you've got it across there, and you have a range, a selection of particles, and you can build up your waveform of the particle reaching you. You can select it from a range of energies to build up your particle reaching for you. So you can reconstruct the particle as a particle wave, a distinct set of oscillations which travel in space with a group velocity and an oscillation inside it. You can create that with a range. And but that particle has to carry an angular momentum with it. So there's sort of other quantum physics which determine what your particle is. Now your detector is also a quantum physics object. So you create a paradox. A lot of these paradoxes are resolved by saying, hang on, let's go fully quantum. And if you go fully quantum, you can then remodel the reverse of it. Your detector is obviously the reverse of the emission, and it's sort of like this thing that people say, oh look, I don't understand tunneling because it violates classical laws. Yes, but your detector is a classical law. Your conceptualization of the detector is a classical law detector, but really, you could time reverse everything, which you're allowed to do, quantum physics, and say your detector is the emitter and your atom is the quantum mechanical absorber. And so you can produce this. Now, this is a whole heap of, heap of things to understand. Now, you can only get from this if you have to go through this horrible, horrible exercise of making individual wave functions, getting them from different energies and adding them together and seeing, I can add, say I've got 50 wave functions, 50 things, and I phase them apart. If I put them a phase shift apart, I can create a particle which flies out using those wavelengths. It's like a traveling square wave in communication. So a traveling pulse has to have a bandwidth of energies and phases for it to actually operate. It's this pretty amazing thing. So this is what we were talking about in an optical fiber. To get a sufficiently short pulse to go through it, the data rate up, you need a bandwidth of frequencies to put it up. And she was hoping. Things okay now. I'm just walking home, and oh shit! Oh no, that's great. My I shouldn't say swear on stuff. My blood thing has not gone completely okay. So hopefully everything's hunky dory, and I'm looking forward to a lovely 2-week break. It's a bit inconvenient having your blood tested every week, so hopefully I've got it into the good range here. So. But the long and short of it, I haven't done a very good description of it. But what I'm trying to describe to you is that there, in education, there is a series of activities one has to go through to understand something. So it's like learning multiplications without ever learning the times table. It's not quite it. You're learning a phenomena, and sort of like describing the difference between someone who looks at maps and goes to lectures about mountain climbing and someone who actually does climb a mountain. And you get the ideas in like each individual wave function that you create. You have to know, you can't just read a formula for a wave function and prove that it fits it. You have to actually go through the opposite type of thing of seeing, measuring the quality of the fit. So you, algebra and high order mathematics, you don't get the idea of what if the wave function's a little bit wrong, what happens? You don't get that easy explanation. You've got to do this computational route. And I'm just very lucky that I was forced in a place and a time to do it. I was very lucky on just all these ways. And I do have this understanding of tunneling. And there is a hierarchy. And tunneling is so absolutely critical for systems in terms of that I want to put energy in a place and then I want to take it out. It represents a storage mechanism. Now you can imagine Heath Robinson system, but it's sort of like the most fundamental way to go through. And I'm just about to get home, so I'll just give you a tunneling story. So this is a molecular physics story. G'day. So for tunneling, you need a energy barrier, which is above this area. So can you imagine a raised valley? So a valley with raised hills on the side. You have to climb over the hill, or you can tunnel through the hill to get to your valley underneath. Now, that the height of that valley is got a thing. Now, I so happen to be looking at the molecule helium 3 plus. So helium 2 plus, and it so happened to have the largest potential barrier of any molecule ever. It's got 1.4 volts of energy, and volts relate to an energy and temperature, so I think room temperature is a 15th of a volt. So this is an incredibly hot, high barrier. So nothing can possibly get through it. So you need incredibly high temperature to get to that barrier. And so you really, this molecule cannot form except in the extremely hot conditions. And in these hot conditions, it would form and fall apart. So people had dismissed its existence. Yet what I was come across was, I wasn't really tuned into people, it can't be. I said, it's there. Let's try and work out what's happening along. So this seems a patently rational thing to do, but one has to understand that by the time you put non-academic hierarchy structures, every degree you give someone, every rank you give someone, it means bit by bit their ability to think disappears. So if you are oblivious to that, you go in and ask about it. So I began to plot it. And so how does a molecule not want to go together, but then really want to go together? That's what happens. So you're coming up and it doesn't want to go together, but very close it does. Now, in nuclear potentials, you've got the things, you've got the two different types. So you've got electric propulsion and nuclear attraction, those go together. But if you've got something purely electrical, like a molecule, the way it does it is that there's a configuration where it doesn't want to go together, and a configuration where it does, and the symmetries cross, and by the Born-Oppenheimer approximation, you can say, here's one symmetry, here's the other, I'll add the two together, and this is what you get. And so you get this potential. Now, you don't have to even do that in the advanced chemistry. They have, Gaussian, these, and the chemical, the advanced supercomputers will give you the curve straight away. And so I had this here. Now, what had happened is that the molecule gets through this barrier, and part of this barrier, it sort of slows up to get to the barrier, so it increases, so these helium and helium 2s3, they come together, helium plus, helium ion and helium 2s3. 2s3 is the quantum mechanical state of an excited atom. Now, what one has to understand is that atoms are very small, but excited atoms are very big. You know, like really big. Thousands of times bigger than your normal atom. And an ion is huge because it's got this potential, it's got a sphere of influence, which is a charge. So ions are fantastic things. So these were coming together dramatically, resonantly, and forming very briefly in the instant of an ion. And happens is that coming together in the instance that there's an electron about, it electron binds with it, and the electron binds with it, forms a molecule, just briefly in a fraction of a blink of an eye. But in that blink of an eye, that atom says, look, I've got a better idea. I'll get rid of you. I'll shoot your electron off. So it pings the electron off and loses a vibrational quanta. So it cools down. So the electron tries to recombine, and the heat, the plasma as it's cooling down will fire this off. And this is a called rho-vibronic cooling by recombination. And so what happens is that in this, so you're up above the tunnel, the tunnel increases the resonance of it, but then you've got a process that when it's at the top, it shrinks down resonantly fast. When I say resonantly, it means a very high rate. And so you produce this light source, and it's the most powerful, condensed, molecular light source. And the bottom line is, you can't understand it if you haven't done quantum mechanics in the right way. So there's wrong way of doing quantum mechanics, right way of doing quantum mechanics, and I don't think anyone really cared, and no one cares. It's just that I happen to be hanging around a little bit further doing it. I'm now home, so that's the end of this lecture. I hope it's okay.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.